We have rules, petitions, and an open administrative conference today. We'll begin with 08-15 relating to creating LSTAT Rule 809-19-8, A4, 809-19-12, 809-19-13, 809-32-1 FM, 809-85, and amend 809-80 sub 3. And there's a companion petition, and the companion is in quotes, to create 809-85 and 809-62-4. The first one on 8-15 relates to the Court of Appeals. The second one, 08-18, relates to the Supreme Court. The subject is the same, namely electronic filing of briefs or electronic filing of papers. And in the interest of disclosure, the Court of Appeals had submitted 08-15, and I asked David Shanker, clerk of the Supreme Court, to draft a comparable rule relating to the Supreme Court rules so that court could look at them both at the same time and see if they want to adopt one, two, or neither. And so Mr. Shanker did that. So we'll start with 08-15, and the presenter is Chief Judge Richard Brown of the Court of Appeals. Judge Brown.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. If it pleases the court, is indebted to Mr. David Shanker for implementing all the technical aspects of electronic filing. Especially, I am indebted because I am technologically deficient in that area, and I admit it. This is the first step toward the largest goal of electronic filing, which will, in the end, greatly facilitate more efficient and timely appeals. This can be addressed in the future after electronic filing in the circuit court becomes an established process. We hope that in time, our state's resources will allow for expansion of that to the appellate level. I can tell you that our court is very excited about this petition. While we were only almost unanimous about the unpublished cases petition, we are unanimously about this one.
Well, now you tell us about the other. Where were you then? Okay, go ahead. Judge Brown.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about 1978 when I first got in the court.
Are you the only original judge left?
77, I think.
Right, are you the only original judge left?
Judge Dykeman.
Judge Dykeman, got it.
Yes, correct. In 1978, we did all of our opinions in longhand. There was no such thing as a computer, at least as in our court. We had carrels upon carrels in our library. We were running out of space. My secretary had an old Smith Corona, and she had to do copy after copy. Cut and paste was really cut and paste. You used the scissors, you cut, and you would paste it on the new draft. That was in 1978. Along came computers, and it changed the whole way that we do things. Our library now has two carrels, and we use that space for other, better purposes. As Justice Robinson can tell you, our court, many of us anyway, on our court do our brief reading at home. We do our brief reading on the road. We do our brief reading in the airports because we have a huge volume of cases. We have to keep it going. If we could just reach our computer on the road, if we could just use a flash drive, which I have here, and take it with us to San Francisco, wherever we happen to be for a conference or on vacation, or in the airport, whatever, it would make a significant difference in how we do our work. This is my next decision conference batch. This is the real batch. I didn't make this up. I have to read these by next Wednesday. This we do every 2 weeks. If I have to take this along with me, obviously, I run the risk of straining myself, my shoulder, my back, whatever. So I only take a few briefs with me at home per night, get it done, come back. If I can do this electronically, it would save a whole lot of time and be much more efficient. This is going to be a great help to us, not just in reading briefs, but at oral argument. We can take the computer right up there. If an issue comes up during oral argument that we didn't think was going to be raised, we thought that it was in the briefs, but we weren't sure, I'll be able to do a text research, call up the keyword, say attorney's fees, frivolous, and be able to call it up within the brief and actually read the briefs of the parties while the question is still being discussed by us. It'll help us in writing the actual opinion because we can cut and paste right from the brief. You won't have to take the brief out and type it over again on a computer or scan it and put it in there. So we're very, very excited about how this is going to work. One of the complaints of the bar is that the districts from time to time may come out with seemingly conflicting opinions at or about the same time. If I find out through talking with another judge in another district that they happen to have a case which may or may not be on point, instead of waiting for their opinion to come out or us getting our opinion out first and have a race to see which is published, which has happened in our court, I can simply call up that brief, read it, see if it's on point.
How will you know?
And if it's on point...
Judge Brown.
I'm sorry. How will we know?
Know that there's another case pending in another district.
I
because
can't.
You and I have, and with all your predecessors, have discussed having some kind of format whereby you will have better control over that. And I have referred you to the Ninth Circuit, which has many more cases than you do, that does have a database of the issues, and they try thereby to eliminate these kinds of problems. So I don't see how having the briefs on file does anything for you if you don't know that there is another action pending.
That is true. It's been our dream practically since the court began to have this kind of database. In fact, we tried it when Chief Judge Scott was on the court.
A long time ago.
It lasted about 8 months, and we finally gave up in absolute frustration because we couldn't do it.
I'm going to ask you to try again, as I have in our conversations.
We will try again, and I've talked with Mr. Shanker about this. The way, when it starts up, we will not have that capability of searching all the briefs in the other districts without talking to the other judges from the other districts first. But in time, Mr. Shanker, and he will talk to you about this, is hopeful that we will be able to do that and finally be able to have the database that we've long wanted. But for now, it'll be great just to be able to talk to a judge in another district and say, do you have X issue? And if they say, well, we've got something that might be close, might be on point, we'll be able to search the brief. So that's a start.
Okay, I accept that, Judge Brown.
What I'm going to do now, unless there's more questions from the court, is I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Shanker.
I have some questions about the rules.
Yes.
As I understand the rule, we've got, this rule will provide that all briefs have to be filed in paper just as they are now, right?
Correct. Okay.
In addition, lawyers must file electronic briefs. Non-represented parties, and when I say lawyers, it includes guardians ad litem, and they are lawyers, okay? Non-represented parties may but need not file electronic briefs, right? Okay.
Correct.
The bar asked you to amend this to provide that the electronic brief be sent to the opposing party or parties. Is that all right with you?
That's fine with me.
Okay.
Yes, we have no objection. I'm sorry I should have mentioned that.
To show you that I, too, am equally technologically deficient or challenged, there are things that I don't understand. For example, the rule says all the briefs have to be filed in one electronic filing. Well, you have three briefs filed. Doesn't each brief have to be filed separately? Because but it doesn't read that way. The rule, as I read it, was that you have to file all the electronic briefs together. So what you mean, either I read it wrong or it's not well enough stated, what you mean is each electronic brief is filed separately as electronic documents. Is that right? Okay. And the
Chief, could you point to specific language?
Okay, I'm going to try and do that.
And are you working on the original petition or the sort of redraft?
I worked on all of them, and didn't, so that's why I'm having a little trouble on this. So if you let me find it after I finish, just to clarify, because I'm willing to accept that I haven't read it right, but I want to clarify those issues. The appendix will be filed separately, right? And you don't necessarily have to file an electronic copy. And the reason you don't is because the trial court record, which is maybe part of the appendix, is not electronic. Therefore, that's an extra burden, right?
Yes.
That's the rationale.
My understanding is that 809.19.8 will say, in addition to the copies required in subdivisions 1, 2, and 3, all parties represented by counsel shall file one electric copy of the brief.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. It's 809.19.8, subsection 8.4. It's the bottom of the page. It says all parties shall file one electric copy of the brief, and it probably should be each brief.
That's correct.
That's my problem with that. Thank you. That's exactly where I have it. And so that's one thing. Okay. Thank you, Judge Brown. Another problem I had, and all of these are technical drafting. I am, unless I hear something from my colleagues that I haven't considered, which happens, I am in favor of this because it's my assumption it's not only good, but we can do it, and that CCAP can do this. Is that right? Yes.
My understanding.
Okay. I have a problem in your original draft on your comment to subsections 809.19.12 and 809.19.13. An electronic brief shall be submitted as a text searchable portable document format, PDF. I never knew what PDF stood for, but that's good. So, document. I don't have any problem with that. I understand that. The next one, next two sentences I have a little trouble with. Text searchable PDF documents must be created by electronically converting the original word processing file to PDF. I'm not bothered by that. Then it says, PDF documents created by scanning paper documents, and I know that is done, do not comply with this requirement. And then it says, an electronic appendix may be non-text searchable PDF documents created by scanning. So, and I understand that. So if they sent in an electric appendix, which is non-text searchable, it's better for you than if they didn't give anything electronically. The last sentence doesn't bother me. But it seems to me the last sentence conflicts with the preceding sentence. Thank you very much. You mean PDF briefs, not documents, created by by scanning paper documents don't comply with this requirement? And if you can't, if you can't answer that, it's fine.
Mr. Shanker on that question. But I just want to comment a little bit about appendices.
Okay.
As you
that was in the
probably
comment.
All of you are well aware, this court really needs good appendices, especially the trial court's written opinion or opinion from the bench. Obviously, some law firms do not have the capability of scanning those particular documents and any other materials such as depositions that are very important to the issue at hand. But we want to give the lawyers who do have that ability the authority to do that and give that to us. And Mr. Shanker will talk to you about how he will scan the other the appendices and do it for us. His court will, his clerks will.
I have to look at that again. I thought it was in both of the petitions, but we can look at that. The other thing that I question here, is I think there's an internal inconsistency. On the one hand, either in the text or in a comment, there's a discussion that it's the paper filing that is the significant date, regardless of the electronic filing. That's the way I read it. And I'll try and find that. Then, when you get down to when you get down to 809.80 sub 5, and in the other one too, it says, if you don't transmit the electric document on or before the date the paper document is filed, it may result in the document being considered untimely. So I mean, I think that somehow we've got to clarify here what happens if the electronic filing doesn't get there timely. I am especially sensitive to that since my home computer has not been functioning for several days. And the result is that things I sent out, I don't know where they are, if they ever reached anyone, and nothing is reaching me. So I think we have to clarify, and if it's a may, I want to know what the considerations are in saying that it's going to result in a not being done. Now, that may not be important. It may not be important for a brief, because my bet is that if a brief doesn't come in exactly on time and it only comes in a day or two late, you just accept it and nothing happens. But when you get down to other pieces of paper, especially at the Supreme Court level, the petition for review is a jurisdictional date. So I just wanted to clarify that with you. What do you have to say?
Well, as far as our court is concerned, what we wanted to do is make sure that everything's filed at the same time. Now, obviously, we all know that there are failures electronically. Obviously, we're not going to be harsh on those people who can't file because of failures. Also, when the brief is filed, it doesn't mean that we're going to get to it right away. It may be a couple of months before we get to it. And we're just hopeful by that time that the electronic brief will have been filed. So it's helpful to us.
Okay. We just have to make sure that that's understood. And as I say, when I looked at this, I did in your appellate court of appeals, none of these looked like they were time sensitive to the extent that it was jurisdictional. And that may be a much larger problem with the Supreme Court, where some of this is jurisdictional.
Yeah, as far as our court is concerned, it's not a question of jurisdiction, it's just a question of efficiency.
Okay, that may help me, but I wanted to be rather clear what is the official record of the Court of Appeals and the concept of timing. You do have a provision that they shall be filed at the same time. That's D, sub D, under 809.19.12. Sub D, the electronic brief shall be electronically transmitted on the same date that the paper brief is filed. What is filing a paper brief in the court? What's the date of filing? Is it when you receive it? So if I mailed it today and it didn't get to you till Friday, is it the date that you receive it?
I believe it's mailed. When it's mailed.
When it was mailed. So you expect the electronic filing to be filed when the paper filing is mailed? So you're going to get that before the electronic filing?
I have to defer to...
Yeah, that's okay, Ms. Carlson. Maybe Mr. Schenker can answer these when he appears.
I think he'd be better. He would better answer.
He wrote an article on it, so he must know everything. Okay. Ms. Brown, I interrupted you, but I wanted to get those questions out so it would at least affect your recitation.
Okay. No, that's fine. My recitation actually is done. Finished. So,
but the court may have additional questions for the ones I posed. Justice Prasso.
The chief made reference to PDF. What is that?
I'm going to defer to Mr. Schenker on that.
It's a portable document format. It's a kind of computer, for lack of my better understanding it, language that is more easily translatable by most people and can be moved from one computer to the next, except my computer does not have the ability to do that. That's why I'm very sensitive about PDF.
Well, the point of the question was that PDF is not defined in this rule or anywhere else in the Wisconsin statutes. And I think that is a deficiency in the petition.
Well, I think that that's well taken and it could be defined. I would have no problem with defining PDF in the rule. I think, I'm not positive, but I think in your wider data case, PDF was discussed and defined, but I'm not positive about that.
You're correct. Yep, you are. So if you're going to define it, why don't you try, see if we were right in wire data. Depends on whether it was in the majority or minority.
It was in the majority.
It was in the majority.
I can tell you that when we had the wire data case, Judge Anderson, who has a great deal of proficiency in that area, was explaining PDF and everything associated to those issues with us. I just wish he were here right now so he could define it for you.
You're doing fine.
Members of the bar will not always have Judge Anderson or David Shanker at hand, and I think that this should be defined somewhere so that people can understand exactly what their obligations are. Judge Brown, you made a compelling argument why this petition will be of value to judges on the Court of Appeals and perhaps judges on this court. You indicated that people can take bulky documents, have it electronically, and they won't have to strain their backs, that they can work at home, that they can work in San Francisco. How does this rule change benefit the public or the bar?
I think one of the important facets of our court is that we get out our opinions in a timely fashion. We're an efficient court. If you look at all the Court of Appeals, the intermediate Court of Appeals across the nation, our turnaround time is one of the best in the country. But we don't want to stand on our laurels. The more tools that we have to get out an efficient, timely, and, in our view, correct decision is the better for the public and for the bar, because we can use the tools that are out there to get our work done quicker and spend more time writing and less time having to lug things around. And we can get it, we can get the information quicker. So it's an efficiency thing.
I would suggest that lawyers who have a similar case would consult briefs on the Court of Appeals and use them if they wanted to, since these briefs will be available to everybody, not just you. Isn't that right? Or am I wrong?
Well, I think, Mr. Shanker can correct me if I'm wrong, I think at the outset it will just be limited to the parties and the court. Now, of course, the court can change that if the court wishes.
But why should it be so limited? Okay, we'll ask Mr. Shanker. That's okay. He's up next. That's fine.
Well, that's exactly the point of my question. It was my understanding that these filings would not be available, at least initially, to everybody. And I think I can understand that, because when you start to do things electronically, the specter of hackers compromising things at least comes to my mind. So it was my understanding that the public really is not going to have access to these electronically filed documents. Now let's make this absolutely crystal clear. And in fact, the attorneys who might be interested in, so we have parallel case, are not going to be able to get access to these documents. Am I right or wrong?
As it's presently constituted, that's correct.
Okay. Now, the chief asked about appendices being filed and that they are not absolutely required to be filed electronically. Is that correct?
Yes, and the reason is that we contemplate that not every attorney will have the ability to scan documents, and we don't want to put a financial burden on those attorneys to have to go out and get one.
But don't attorneys have to acquire special software in order to comply with the PDF requirements?
Yes, they do, but our view is that that's more universal now in the offices than scanning equipment is. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but that was our view.
Now, the Court of Appeals was made the case, I think it was several years ago, about the importance of appendices. And there were certain things you wanted in appendices. And this court agreed with you about that. But when members of the Court of Appeals are in San Francisco reading the brief electronically, they may not have the appendices. Is that correct?
No, I don't think that's correct, because even if the attorney does not voluntarily provide those documents in an appendix, Mr. Shanker's office will scan the record, scan the appendix, and provide it electronically to us. So we will have all the necessary documents at our fingertips when we're on the road or at home.
There will be a cost to that.
I assume there will be, but I will let Mr. Shanker address that.
It's my understanding that the clerk's office will review an electronically filed document to determine whether that document should be accepted. Is that correct?
I think initially that's correct.
What are the standards for review?
I don't think that there are substance standards. I think it's just a question of whether or not it's capable of being read, I believe. And Mr. Shanker can talk to that, too.
Well, the clerk's office currently examines any brief file, too. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well,
I think it's basically the same kind of review.
Well, the rule doesn't indicate exactly what goes into the review. And as I understand it, if something is due on a Friday and it's not accepted on that Friday, it may be late. So, I mean, I think the bar would want to know what the standards of review are in the clerk's office.
Well, I'm all for transparency, so...
So there.
If the court wants to adopt a rule that gives that information, provides that information, this court has no objection whatsoever to that.
Has this petition been reviewed by the appellate practice section of the bar?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
We can
my,
ask.
Chief staff attorney tells me that they did.
I think that we can ask Ms. Owens. Ms. Owens sent this out to a whole long list of people, and I don't have my notes in front of me of to whom she sent them out, but we can check that. the bar has approved this. Didn't this, the Board of Governors approve this? Okay.
I have no further questions.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Judge Brown. We're going to hear from Mr. Schenker, who can report not only on this, but maybe on the next one. Is there anyone here who wants to appear on 0815? That's the Court of Appeals electronic filing. Okay. Mr. Schenker, if you'd...
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the Court.
We'd like you to answer Justice Prosser's questions.
Certainly.
One related to costs. Mm-hmm. Two related to why isn't the bar getting access. Three, PDF.
Okay.
And whether that's related to cost, what it means, and how it is handled. And if you can tell us what the appellate section of the bar was told about this. Did I leave one out of your questions? Okay, go ahead.
Well, before I begin, I just want to acknowledge CCAP and the extraordinary work that they've done to create the system that will make appellate filing possible. We have an extraordinary case management system in our circuit courts, and eventually that will be integrated with the appellate filing system. The rules that we have before you today are an initial step. It's really a baby step toward e-filing, the purpose of which is primarily to provide these documents in electronic form to the justices and judges of the appellate courts. Okay, with respect to your questions, beginning with cost, I anticipate that the costs in the clerk's office will be minimal. We will be scanning a good number of appendices for the Court of Appeals, but scanning now is a function that is really not much more time-consuming than making a Xerox copy. It's basically running it through a machine. The system is such that it will enable us to associate a scanned document with the case docket in the CCAP-SCCA docketing system. So it's a very efficient process. With respect to costs to attorneys, there will be an initial cost in terms of time that attorneys will need to learn the system, get used to it, learn how to comply with these rules. But I believe that over time, those costs will diminish considerably as attorneys get used to using the system. You know, everybody knows how to buy something on Amazon.com, and it really won't be much more complicated than that.
That assumes a fact, not an evidence.
Yes.
You may proceed.
PDF. It is a universal format. It is used in documents in courts throughout the country. There is free software available for conversion of documents from Word or WordPerfect to PDF. So there should be very little in the way of expense there.
Most of the new computers come with PDF as a reader and supplier.
Yes. Yes. And most versions of Word and WordPerfect now issued have a conversion feature in them. So we don't anticipate that will be a problem. The scanning of appendices is another story. We acknowledge that many attorneys throughout Wisconsin don't have scanning equipment. And that's why we didn't want to require a scanned appendix at this time. That is something that the clerk's office will do in just about every case where there is an electronic brief filed. In cases where there are appendices of hundreds or thousands of pages, we will confer with the Court of Appeals as to whether or not they want that scanned. If so, we will do it.
The scanning that you will do is just for the benefit of the Court of Appeals, then?
And the Supreme Court.
Yes, I understand. Why not for the lawyers?
Actually, the lawyers in the cases will have access to these documents.
What about the other lawyers?
We made the decision. Actually, the decision was made at the circuit court level when the circuit court e-filing rule was adopted, not to allow electronically filed documents to be publicly accessed.
I know, but that was a pilot program in, what, two counties?
Well, no, I'm talking about the rule that was adopted effective this year that will apply to all the counties.
Okay. But there's no requirement that there be e-filing at the trial court level, is there?
No, there is not.
Okay.
But the system is now in place so that it could happen throughout Wisconsin.
Okay. But what about now? Why can't it be publicly accessible?
Well, I think the concern is with confidentiality of documents, with who's going to be responsible for redacting documents, who will be responsible if things aren't properly redacted. The briefs are not so much a concern as the appendices. Sometimes a document, say in a family law case that contains financial information, social security numbers, account numbers, et cetera, will slip through.
Are you going to, when you scan them, produce them electronically in a PDF format too?
Yes, that's what the scanning will do.
Right.
The scanning will create non-text searchable PDFs
as
opposed to text searchable.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Currently, briefs are available electronically, except it seems to me it's after the fact. That is, the law libraries scan all of this. And so if I want to take a look at a brief that was filed in a case a while ago, I can get it to the law library. The only problem is the lag time in terms of staff for them to scan these things. That's my understanding. Do you have an understanding consistent or inconsistent with that?
No, that is correct. And it only applies to published opinions. Often it is 18 months to 2 years after the publication when the brief and appendix will show up on the law library website. But those are also all non-searchable PDF. And there's no way to, say, search within documents or create a search that will bring you a range of documents in that system. It's a very crude system that really basically needs or requires a case number to access the briefs.
Who redacts them?
No one that I know of.
And all the briefs are bound, or were, last time I looked, in the state law library and in other libraries. So if I went to the state law library, I can get a copy of any brief.
That is correct.
And appendix.
That's correct. And there's an inconsistency there, but there's a certain practical obscurity to the fact that those briefs, you have to go to the library to get them. Mm. And with respect to the briefs being and appendices being available online, even 2 years after the fact, that's a system that's been in place for a while now. Maybe it's okay. Maybe it isn't. That's something that the court may have to decide.
What would your objection be to putting just the brief and not the appendix online available to everybody?
I guess I wouldn't object to that. I would be concerned about privacy.
Well, the lawyers are not supposed to have things in the briefs that that should be redacted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have found examples where they're brief hasn't been accurately redacted, but most of the time in the brief mm-hmm. is a blackout.
Yes, well, that's a policy decision mm-hmm. That the court would have to make.
Can CCAP provide for attorney access to, or for any public access to the briefs only, if electronically filed?
Yes, I believe that they can.
Another user is the media.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent, as you very well know, matters are filed electronically, then the public information officer can submit them to media on request.
Yes.
And does.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we could make those documents in electronic form available to the public information officer to transfer to the media.
And you've done that. Are you sure CCAP can put them on the internet so that they're available to media, or should we check with Ms. Bouquet?
I am 80% sure that it can be done.
Technologically can be done.
Sure.
The question is, I mean,
yes, I mean,
I on occasion will get a brief that's electronically filed in a case that's currently pending before the United States Supreme Court, you know, and find out what's going on with their briefs there. But the question comes to my mind, not if it can be done, but what are the resources, and
yes.
I just have no, these difficulties.
What I meant was that they have the capability now to sort of open up that floodgates.
Okay.
There are already opinions from the Court of Appeals and Supreme Court that are available through the web docketing system. So it can be done.
All right. Mr. Shanker.
Let's see.
Okay.
You indicated that briefs and unpublished opinions are not presently scanned. Is that right?
No, we do not have brief. We do not scan the briefs now for the court. They are. Yeah, you're talking about the law library.
Yeah.
Yes, that's correct. They scan the briefs in published opinions from the Court of Appeals, and of course all Supreme Court opinions only.
But if all briefs have to be filed electronically, all the briefs in what will become unpublished opinions will be available.
That's correct.
What impact, if any, do you think that will have on the practice of law in relation to the new citation of unpublished opinions?
I wouldn't speculate about that, but it's another tool for attorneys, certainly, to have access to those materials.
Unless we give them access. Under the rule as drafted, they don't have any access to it.
That's right.
What are the review standards in your office for the receipt of electronic briefs?
Our standards are based on the appellate rules. They're the same that they would be for paper briefs. You know, we go through it, we look at to make sure it has the right color cover, that it's in the right font, that it has all the required certifications in it, all the required sections, and we would do the same with the electronic brief. So there aren't any extra requirements necessarily, except for the ones that are contained in this rule. For example, the certification that the content of the electronic brief be the same as the content of the paper brief.
In reading this material, frankly, I didn't understand. The picture I was getting is that somehow an electronically filed brief would permit the reader of that brief to click on something and get mm-hmm. other documents. Is that correct?
Yes. The attorneys and others will have the ability or be permitted to file enhanced briefs, which means that they can include hyperlinks within those briefs to cases or statutes cited in the briefs. And that is something that's fairly easy to do in word processing programs. You would simply convert the citation into a link that can be clicked on. It will open up a new window and bring up that case or statute that's referred to.
Would all of those citations be included in the printed paper brief?
The citations would be in the brief, but the ability, of course, to go in and get that case would not be.
In other words, if you had it electronically, the case would come up in blue or green or yellow.
Correct.
You click on that blue, green, or yellow, whatever it is, that will bring up the case in Westlaw, Lexis, or something else, and you could read it and decide whether or not you, the reader, decide whether or not it applies, or they misstated it, or whatever.
Yes.
That's the point.
Yes, so I should mention that the rule specifically provides that you cannot access case or statutes from password-protected sites like Lexis or Westlaw.
Unless you have a password.
Well, no, because the the court would have to have its own password to get into it.
Not in an individual password.
Correct.
So you'd go to something that is not protected, like our own database.
Yes, exactly.
Mr. Shanker, you, I think you testified, and I think you used words, these words or something to this effect, that this petition is a baby step.
Yes.
What is a giant step? This is a I mean, if you're going to require every brief to be filed electronically, what the heck are the big steps?
The big step will be to change the rule not to require the paper copy. That is eventually to have it, or to require a limited number of paper copies, so that it would be the electronic copy that was the official copy of the court, as it will be under the circuit court rules. It would also mean that the record could eventually come to the appellate courts from the circuit courts in electronic form. You know, what the eventual goal is to do something that might be called full-blown e-filing, so that every document in the case could be e-filed, could be responded to, orders could be issued electronically. It is very much like the system that is envisioned in the circuit courts.
In the circuit courts, it's not mandatory that you file electronically.
I believe not. That's correct. I'm not sure if it may get to that point. It is in federal courts mandatory that documents be e-filed, or that cases be e-filed.
So do you anticipate that filing in the circuit court will become mandatory within a couple of years?
I couldn't speculate about that. I really don't know. I don't think so. I don't think it'll happen that quickly.
We had an electronic filing committee that worked on this. I think Teresa Owens was staff and very active in that, and was, I think her report was the basis for our pilot program and then for these rules. But at the moment, I don't even know how many people are filing electronically in circuit court now, do you?
Now, it's my understanding that it is only continuing now in Washington County, but that they have expanded their e-filing.
From small claims to what?
Right. There are a wide range of civil cases that can be e-filed.
And that was one of our original pilot program counties, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
And what was the other county?
Kenosha.
And what happened to Kenosha?
I don't know.
Seceded from the state, I think.
So that's it. Okay. Justice Press, are you done?
I'm done.
I have a question. One of my main concerns deals with issues that might come before us in a case, and that deals, and I focus on the timeliness and whether or not something would be struck because it isn't timely.
Mm-hmm.
Walk me through, if you will, the provision regarding the filing of electronic briefs and the timeliness of those of that filing. What section is that contained? Is that 809.80 sub 5?
I believe that's correct, yes.
Now, are we talking about Supreme Court or Court of Appeals? Or both?
809.805, I think, covers both.
Okay.
The idea is that the paper copy is the official copy and must be filed in a timely fashion for filing to be accomplished.
Let me interject, if I may, because, of course, we have facsimile filing. How does that work? Because if I recall correctly, facsimile filing, the facsimile is the document of moment.
Yes.
And anything sent later is thrown away, right?
Correct, although briefs are not included in facsimile filing.
Okay.
However, the facts must arrive by 5 o'clock on the day that is the deadline, and the filer must fax all required copies. So they have to fax the document 5 or 10 times, depending upon what it is. Mm-hmm.
So this rule, as proposed, has the original paper document, if you will, not a fax document, has the original paper document as the document that is important for purposes of filing, the original paper brief, and that is informed by the mailbox rule for filing as to the deadline?
Yes, although if a brief cannot be considered filed when it's mailed unless it contains a certificate of mailing. Otherwise, it will be considered filed from the day it is received by the clerk's office. Mm-hmm.
So you can, for instance, I can email, electronically file a brief a week beforehand,
right,
before the deadline. But if it does not contain a postmark before the deadline, what happens?
Well, the paper copy has to get there.
Okay, so if a paper copy doesn't get there because it isn't sent,
you know, correct, then it's late.
And what's the consequence of late?
I guess it's up to the court, of course, mm-hmm, whether to, you know, that it's subject to dismissal or.
I suppose your answer is correct. It's up to the court in some instances. That is, if it's a brief, getting an extension of a brief is one area of inquiry. It seems a little distinct from the area of inquiry for petitions for review, which arguably the deadline is the deadline. And there is no, and it's jurisdictional.
Yes.
And so what happens with my hypothetical in terms of a petition for review here to the Supreme Court, that it is, let me modify it a bit, that it is filed electronically 2 or 3 days beforehand and they forget to timely send the paper document so that it is, does not contain a postmark prior to the deadline and is not received in paper form prior to the deadline, what happens?
It's the same as it would be now if the paper copy was late.
Under D, 809.83D, the petition for review, unlike briefs, it's timely only if you receive it.
Correct.
There is no mailing time except for a pro se person confined in an institution. So for petitions for review, you've got to get the paper into the clerk's office, and you got to get the electronic copy,
yes,
into the clerk's office on or before the last 30th day, or whatever date that is required for a petition for review.
Correct.
And that's covered by, if I understand this, 809.80 sub 3, except as provided in paragraphs B through E. Filing isn't timely unless it's received. Is that right?
Yes, I don't have the complete rule here.
Okay. But what do you do under, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
809.80 sub 5, the last sentence. Failure to transmit the electronic document on or before the paper document is filed, which can be mailing for some purposes or actual receipt for others, may result in the document being considered untimely. It is either untimely or it isn't untimely. I don't know what may result.
Yes. Perhaps that should be a shall.
Well, I don't know. That picks up what... It's one thing. Yeah, it's one thing to have some of this a little loose, if you're talking about filing of briefs or some other things, that there's a little leeway for. But when it's jurisdictional, when if you don't meet the deadline, you are out, so sad. I don't care if it's a case worth $5 or $500 million, goodbye, or a case involving, you know, great constitutional issues, goodbye. So it seems to me I need some clarity of what's controlling. You've advised me, I think, that I don't have to worry about the facsimile rule and any intersection or collision with the facsimile rule because, for instance, petitions for review cannot be filed by facsimile. Am I correct or incorrect in that?
I believe that's correct.
Okay. Now, if the electronic petition for review is filed before the deadline, but the paper doesn't get there until after the deadline, no jurisdiction.
Correct.
If the paper gets there before the deadline and the electronic gets there after the deadline, as the chief pointed out, the rule now says it may be deemed considered untimely.
Correct.
That seems a little crazy. That seems inappropriate to me.
Can I just add something to that before you answer it? If you look at 809.62 sub 4, and this covers petition for review, and that's really what we're concerned about.
Because that's so important.
Right. Yeah. Then you have a comment. The electronic copy of a petition for review, response or appendix, is in addition to and not a replacement for the paper copies. Okay? The filing requirement is satisfied only when the requisite number of paper copies are filed. A requisite number is filed. That's right. If an attorney is unable to comply with the requirement of electronic copy, a motion for relief may be filed. That's the comment to 809.624. Is that what you're talking about in 809.80 sub 5? Failure to transmit may result. I mean, I wrote down in my notes conflict when I read 809.624 comment. I don't know really what the relationship is between these two in terms of the jurisdiction. I really don't care about the briefs. I mean, I have just never seen, unless the lawyer is repeated and without cause, always late on briefs and always a lot late. I've not seen or heard a court go down to the mat on a short delay. Maybe I shouldn't say that publicly and on the Wisconsin Eye, but I haven't seen that. But petition for review is something different, and I think that this, that the petition has to be drafted so that it is very carefully reflects what triggers the jurisdictional time period. And if you want it paper, it has to be paper, at least until we go all electronic, or what you're going to do with that, because there's a conflict here. My opinion.
Yes, I think you're right. Yes, that's a decision that the court would have to make with respect to how strict they want to make the electronic petition for review required.
What would you recommend?
Well, I guess I think if it's not a requirement, then it's not going to happen. So we're far more likely to get electronic petitions for review if it's jurisdictional.
So you're...
This is a new system, a system that people aren't yet accustomed to. I have some concerns about closing the courthouse doors to someone who has a valid appeal by adding on to what we already have that do shut the courthouse doors.
Sure.
And, you know, we're looking at here not an untimely filed petition, but rather briefs that come subsequent to the petition for review or for the notice of appeal. So I have some real concerns about shutting the courthouse doors. If we do that, have you examined at all the times when current briefs are filed late and whether that's ever been deemed jurisdictional?
I have not.
The only thing that's jurisdictional here is the petition for review. I don't know that the response is jurisdictional, and I don't know the appendix is jurisdictional. And this court has held that if you file something that looks like, smells like, and even can be considered a petition for review, it is so considered, and then you write, we write the person and say, hey, what did you mean? Tina, is that the... Excuse me, is that the class that was supposed to come in here? Okay. So I think we do have a jurisdictional kind of access to justice issue here. The other thing, if I can raise another issue, you don't have anything about an original action.
Correct.
Why not?
Well, this is a kind of a first step. And we wanted to include the most commonly filed documents and the ones that would be most useful to the judges and justices of these courts in electronic form.
It's usually on these original actions that people on the outside of the court system are very interested and want documentation. At least that's been my experience. So you're going to get more media requests on it. You're going to get requests from other lawyers who may have similar issues.
Well, I should mention that we will have the capacity, of course, to scan those documents.
Right.
And provide them in electronic form for the court.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mr. Shanker, on the basis of anything that's been asked or answered this morning, do you see the need for any amendments to the petition?
Well, I would say there are questions that the court has raised that will need to be answered, particularly with respect to the jurisdictional issue in the Supreme Court. I'm not sure that whether or not we need a definition for PDF. It's a term in common use, so I'm not sure if it still needs defining today. And I can't think of others now.
It's helped me.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, one of the issues is going to be tinkering with the petition for review about electronic versus paper as to the timeliness and whether you can dump it if you don't get both timely.
Yes.
I think that will have to be... Let me just also note, earlier on, the chief had a question about the electronic copy of the brief all being filed in a single electronic file. And there was some discussion with regard to that modification in sub 4. But I also point your attention to the final paragraph of the comment, the subsections 809.19.12, which states in the first sentence of that paragraph, all electronic briefs shall be submitted in a single electronic file. And I think that's what the chief was earlier referring to, so that should be modified also.
Right.
And I still am not sure about the third paragraph in that comment about PDF documents created by scanning don't comply. I think it's only certain documents PDF by scanning don't comply. But the electronic appendix by non-text searchable do comply.
That's correct.
There's a conflict of those last two sentences.
Right.
One of them has to be narrowed.
Right. We should make it clear that it's only briefs
that
cannot be created as scanned PDF.
Right.
Documents.
Not just documents. And that's what I think, too. Okay.
I guess the other question that the court raised that may be worth discussing is public access
right.
to these briefs.
Right. At least to the briefs, if not the appendices, because the appendices do raise some redaction problems. People are not as careful in the appendix. And may require an enormous amount of work on your part, where it's thousands of pages.
Correct.
Okay.
If there were public access to briefs, there's no technical problem whatsoever about public access to briefs, but not public access to appendices?
They're going to be filed differently in electronic form. They're not filed on the same in the same document.
Yes, I don't believe that there would be a problem. It's my understanding that, as I mentioned before, the briefs will be associated with the SCCA docketing system, as well as the appendices, but I think that one can be blocked from public view. So that if the public wanted to access these documents, they would go to the web, go to the case search. When they pulled up the case docket, they would find a little PDF icon next to certain entries that would enable them to view those documents.
Why don't you check with Jean Bousquet, if you would, before the court finishes its discussion, and see whether or not, one, we could have public access to the briefs, and two, whether or not we can block public access to the appendix. Okay. I think that would answer your question. Is there anything else you want to say about either the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court petition?
Only, Your Honor, that we're ready to go with this project, that the system exists. You may have noticed that there's a new button on the Wisconsin Court's homepage on the web that brings up the e-filing system. And it's that same button that will be used for the appellate e-filing. I think it will be a great advantage to the courts.
All right. So I gather you're in favor of these.
Indeed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Schenker, and thank you for your article in the Wisconsin Lawyer, which appeared in September 2008, which talked about the hearing today and summarized the electronic filing. So that was very helpful to the court and its interest in giving as much real notice to people who are interested so that they can comment.
Thank you, Chief Justice. One more thing before I forget. I did appear before the appellate practice section this past May at the State Bar Convention discussing this project, and I handed out a draft version of this rule at that time and asked for feedback. In fact, that presentation was the basis of the article that just appeared in the Wisconsin Lawyer. So there has been notice and there has been a lot of interest in this project.
Did you get any feedback of opposition?
No, not from the bar.
About 2 years ago when I made an inquiry, or three, the bar advised me that approximately 15% of the bar did not have access to e-filing, the mailing,
email address.
Email address, that's what I'm looking for, I'm sorry. This year, when I made the same inquiry, it was reduced to 5% of the bar did not have email addresses. So we still have 5% of, whether it's 15 or 20%, is still a large number of people. Small percent, but large number of people. So we still have lawyers who don't have ready access to the electronic system. Of course, if they use a printing house, chances are the printing house has access to an electronic system, and when they print the brief, could do the electronic filing. I mean, that's been in my mind. Do you think that's true?
Yes, I do. It could also be accomplished, say, at a local Kinko's, as long as there was some sort of email account that could be used to access the internet.
Thank you. Does anyone else want to appear on either one of these? Does the court have any questions of either Judge Brown or Mr. Shanker? Judge Brown, we usually give the proponent an opportunity to speak if he insists. Put that way, Judge Brown.
Thank you, Your Honor. I noticed there's no light today.
Right.
It's always nice to be on the other side of the box.
Good. Thank you, Judge Brown. Thank you, Mr. Shanker. Bring no further questions. We'll close the hearing on whatever this is, 08-15-08-18 electronic filing in the appellate court. It's my understanding there is not another hearing and will appear in administrative conference in a few moments, so the court is adjourned on open hearing, and we will reappear in open administrative conference.